Sav, the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Northwest Safe. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home, so let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Wait, what?
There is some seriously disgusting analysis going on TV in relationship to the mass shootings over the weekend. The kind of commentary that you generally expect on Twitter from a bunch of loser trolls who have nothing better to do. But now we're getting it in the form of legitimate journalistic analysis, pretending now that not only are Republicans and Donald Trump responsible for the mass shootings, but they actually want it to happen, that we want people to lose their lives in such a disgusting and dramatic and traumatic way. And we start this morning's Bika Brzezinski, Morning Joe. They were talking about Trump in a way that defies our honest and generous and positive nature as human beings. Because I generally don't think that people are inherently bad. I certainly think some are, but I generally don't think journalists and analysts are just horrible human beings. But when they do this, you question whether or not they're capable of just common decency and fairness.
Isn't it okay to deduce that at this point, this is what he wants? He is inciting hatred, inciting violence.
You know what he's also doing? He's inspiring your stupid segments that get you a lot of coverage on Twitter and websites and blogs and this show. Is that what you want? I think people like Mika Brzezinski, they say this because they want to get under the president's skin. I think they do this because they want to get some media coverage. Now, clearly, they have some things to say that I think are worth listening to in the general sense of wanting conversations that matter about how to address some of these issues that are facing our country, including mass shootings. But for her to say things like this, that transcends just wanting some coverage of your show. This is you being an awful human being. And I honestly don't understand how people like this are okay on television making comments this despicable.
It's inciting racism. If he doesn't unequivocally call it off and say, this is wrong, and we stand together against this, and we are doing this, this, and this to help fight hate crime. I mean, this is a president who seems to want these things to happen. How else can this be explained?
Honestly, you can explain it honestly. I mean, you can stop just talking about the El Paso shooter for a moment and turn to Dayton and point out the fact that that shooter appears to be a far to the left Antifa supporter. Now, he apparently, according to social media, was a fan of Elizabeth Warren. Is Elizabeth Warren to blame? Does she want this to happen? Now, I would say no. And I would say any conservative who loves the fact, is excited by the fact that the Dayton shooter was apparently an Antifa supporter, don't be excited about that. Use it to point out the dangers of fringe movements that are violent like Antifa. But don't say it in a way that's excited. Mika Brzezinski likes delivering messages like this because she knows the president watches. She has an axe to grind because of the way he spoke about her. And the way he spoke about her was disgusting and unprofessional and unpresidential. But this goes one step too far. And if it was just MSNBC and a one-off, this would not be the same conversation. Unfortunately, this is what's going on CNN with Don Lemon talking with Kirsten Powers.
President blaming violent video games, mental illness, dark corners of the internet, and a culture promoting violence. Kirsten, the president, reading off of a teleprompter, condemned race.
By the way, I love that. We're going to talk about that line of attack with Governor Scott Walker of Wisconsin in at the bottom of the hour. This idea that pointing out that he's reading off of a teleprompter. Yes. And every president reads off of a teleprompter. When he doesn't read off of a teleprompter, you point out that he doesn't read off of a teleprompter and he kind of just doesn't know what he's saying and he's going all over the place. The president wanted to deliver a very clear message on white supremacy and gun violence, and he did. And to stay on message, you write a speech that fully incorporates your emotions and your message. Don Lemon reads from a script every single day. He reads from a teleprompter every single day on his show. When he goes ahead and introduces the guests on his show, it's written in a script form that's put on a TV screen in front of him from which he reads it from. But when the president reads off of a script for a speech that he was involved in, all of a sudden it's weird and wrong. We got to point out, not when Obama does it, not when Obama reads off of a script, but when Trump does, apparently that's news.
Prompter condemned racism, he condemned white supremacy, but at rallies, in his tweets, he says things that fuel those beliefs and people who support them. We've seen this pattern before.
Right. I mean, it's the arsonist coming and saying they want to help put out the fire, right? I mean, he's the one who created the fire in the first place.
He created the fire in the first place, but the rhetoric coming from the left created no fires whatsoever that led to Steve Scalise almost being shot to death. The rhetoric coming from the left, constantly calling people Nazis simply because they disagree with them politically, that causes no problems whatsoever. Calling the president a Nazi and a white nationalist, engaged in art, quote unquote, of the president being murdered, being beheaded, a bloodied head of Donald Trump being displayed by Kathy Griffin, that's all right. That's all right. But this is too far, because we have someone acting out supposedly in his name. We'll ignore the Dayton shooter for a bit now because we don't really want to admit that he might have been inspired by left-wing lunatics. And then, of course, on CNN, they'll claim, and Jake Tapper said this on Sunday, we played the audio for you on yesterday's show, that Republicans, who he reached out to, didn't want to go on the show, wouldn't return phone calls. Not that I would blame them, since Jake Tapper on this issue in the past has let a whole bunch of people accuse his Republican guests of murder. But we find out, according to Representative Matt Gaetz of Florida, he said he was booked to appear on CNN shows, and they both canceled on him. Aaron Burnett, booked and then canceled. Anderson Cooper, booked and then canceled. He tweeted, "I'm ready for the discussion whenever CNN is," but they don't appear to be ready for the discussion. Instead, they appear to be ready to continue the exact type of rhetoric that I'm told is dangerous. In fact, last night on Twitter, and this was a movement that was fueled by blue check marks, there was a hashtag called Massacre Moscow Mitch. It was trending. Massacre Moscow Mitch. Moscow Mitch being Mitch McConnell. And a bunch of people were throwing that out there under the ridiculous position that he's stalling universal background checks, which he is not. He's stalling H.R. 8, which does not have the support of the Senate because it's not about solely universal background checks. And the Democrats know this. And this was always set up to trick people who don't actually read the legislation that the Democrats claim exists. That was trending. And after it started to trend, lo and behold, some protesters decided to show up outside of Mitch McConnell's house, wishing someone would break in and stab him to death.
Somebody out there with some booty dolls in these motherfuckers. That's what I'm hoping.
What?
Hopefully somebody out there with some booty dolls in these.
Yeah, you know somebody is. That's probably what it is. Just stab the motherfucker in the heart, please.
That was live streamed on Facebook. And as that was happening, you saw Wajahat Ali, an analyst on CNN, tweeting, "Massacre Moscow Mitch is trending. I still have faith in America." Now, he came under criticism for that, mostly by folks on the right side, because, again, left-wingers in this case, they hate rhetoric, except when it's rhetoric used against the president or against Republicans in leadership. They called him out. Now, he deleted that tweet, weirdly, right before going on CNN to talk about the dangers of rhetoric. He deleted the tweet, and he went after the bad faith right-wing trolls who went after him. I'm sorry, but what's the good faith way to look at that tweet? "Massacre Moscow Mitch is trending. I still have faith in America." Can you tell me what's the good faith argument? In fact, I'll open up the Numb Better Tax Resolution text line. I'm curious, and I want serious responses to this. Don't joke on this. I'm legitimately curious, especially from the left-wing audience that I have, because I know a lot of liberals listen to the show. Text me and tell me what the good faith argument is behind that tweet. Moscow Mitch, Massacre Moscow Mitch, is trending. I still have faith in America. Because he called it bad faith to attack him for that, to criticize him for that. I'm curious, especially given CNN talking about how dangerous rhetoric has become, despite engaging in it on their own. What's the good faith argument? 1-800-465-8770. Send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. We just got a text in from the 206 from Casey. Rhetoric like this makes me damn proud to be on the journey from being a progressive to being the conservative I am today. I don't think the Democratic Party realizes what they're doing to themselves when they engage like this. 1-800-465-8770. Don't forget, if you'd like, you can go behind the scenes of the show by adding me on your Instagram. Just fire up that Instagram app and add the screen name Jason Rantz. It's all one word, J-S-O-N-R-A-N-T-Z. And you can look at video and photos from behind the scenes as we put on the show each and every weekday from 3 to 6. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
An official with the King County Democrats. His name is David Fleetwood. He's the first vice chair of the King County Democrats and the vice chair of the 11th Legislative District Democrats. He decided to push a dangerous conspiracy theory on Twitter, all so that he could defend violent Antifa thugs. That's what it appears to be. He claims that an attack on the independent journalist Andy Ngo didn't actually take place. In fact, he says that it was staged, except for the fact, of course, that it was literally caught on tape. They're punching him. Throwing things at him. Cheering on. Cheering it on as they beat him. Now, this came up on Twitter because I was having a conversation, or really I was being yelled at and called a Nazi and white nationalist by some Sounders fans who got mad that I said Antifa is a violent group of losers who go ahead and attack anyone based on simply disagreeing with their political perspectives. They're not fighting fascists. They're fighting conservatives, who they call fascists. And so someone challenged me to even claim one instance in which Antifa committed any act of violence. Of course, there's a long list of that. It literally happens at almost every single Antifa rally. But I threw out there that Andy Ngo in Portland 2 months ago suffered this disturbing and disgusting assault on him. Specifically by Rose City Antifa. That's the Portland group for Antifa. Now, David Fleetwood of the King County Democrats, he tweeted in response. I guess he found the conversation somehow because he doesn't follow me and I certainly don't follow him. He said, quote, "There's no evidence Antifa attacked Andy Ngo. Only his word that it was them." And he used this quote unquote attack to raise $250,000 for injuries that appear to have been at best exaggerated. Andy Ngo suffered a brain hemorrhage. Andy Ngo was hospitalized. That's expensive. I'm glad that people donated to my friend Andy Ngo for this. Now, immediately, of course, I pointed out, as did a whole bunch of other people on Twitter point out, dude, there's literal video, you idiot. Literal video. Here's the video. He then decided to double down on his conspiracy, it would appear, to defend Antifa violence. He then responded, "I suppose it would be alarming for a fascist. Nobody in that video was identified. Looks staged to me." It looked staged to him. In fact, the entire protest that took place on that day in Portland, with hundreds of people, all bankrolled apparently by Andy Ngo to fake this attack so he can make the $250,000 he ended up making, apparently, from a GoFundMe page. Got it. This staged event was condemned nationwide, including, by the way, Brian Stelter on CNN, who generally doesn't cover anything that makes a conservative look like a victim.
Conservative journalist Andy Ngo was out there covering rival protests on Saturday. Antifa on one side, right-wing figures on the other side. But as the demonstrations clashed, protesters, it appears to be Antifa protesters, then attacked No. He's been out there in the past. He's been covering protests in Portland for quite some time. His critics say he's there to cause trouble. But that's unacceptable. The idea that he would be attacked, that he would be bloodied in that way, unacceptable, period. And it's important that everyone make that clear. Even left-wing critics who don't like him and things like that. There's much still to be, much more we don't know yet about all the circumstances, but disturbing to see that in Portland.
You know what we found out since he made those comments about a month and a half ago? Rose City Antifa, they took responsibility for the attack. They posted on their website, and hat tip to the Daily Caller for pointing this out. They called it community defense. They were claiming they were defending themselves against Andy Ngo, who literally was just walking by and documenting everything. What they don't like is the fact that he documents what Antifa does, which includes violence, which includes absolute disgusting commentary towards cops and conservatives. They look bad. They know they look bad on video. They don't want to be videotaped, so they decided to attack Andy Ngo. And David Fleetwood is now doing their press for them by pushing forward these disgusting, dangerous conspiracy theories. These are dangerous because if you know you're going to get cover from positions of people in positions of power like David Fleetwood of the King County Democrats, you know what happens? You feel enabled and empowered to do more and more and more of that same exact behavior of attacking people because you know there are no consequences. In this case, no consequences, no arrest yet. No one's been arrested for this. In fact, the cops in Portland, and you know that I'm a big supporter of police officers, but in Portland, they're acting like absolute cowards because they are listening to a mayor who is an absolute coward tell them not to get involved. But I'm sorry, when you see this kind of assault, you have to get involved.
What was surreal as I was getting beat is that I could actually still see the Multnomah County Justice Center, and that houses some of the most important institutions of law in Portland. It has the sheriff's office, it has the central police precinct, has courthouses. And I just kept thinking at any moment after the first punch to the back of my head that police were going to swoop in and save me, but it never happened. The punches kept coming, and as I stumbled away on my own, in bloodied, I thought at any point the police would come to me then, and that didn't happen either.
Instead of condemning this Antifa violence, we have a Democrat in a position of power within the King County Democrats defending it and pretending it didn't happen at all. This kind of attack is going to happen more and more and more and more by a group of domestic terrorists. That is what I believe them to be. A lot of people will say that you should condemn white nationalism and their violence. I do. Unequivocally. Violence, whether it's being done by someone far to the right or far to the left, is disturbing, disgusting, wrong, should be absolutely punished. The difference is, I say that of both sides. Liberals say that of one side. Because they don't want to admit that what they're doing is wrong. Because in their heads, they think they're doing the right thing. Because again, in their heads, they think every single conservative is a Nazi and a white nationalist. That's what they believe. And so they defend this kind of behavior, and this is disgusting. And it's on all of us, every single person, whether or not you live in King County, to shine a spotlight on this loser for what he's doing. The one good thing in all of this, I'm told behind the scenes by people, because I have most of my friends are Democrats because I live in Seattle. I'm told they view David Fleetwood as a crazy person. Well, unfortunately, King County Democrats aren't really giving me much of a comment in response. They just simply said David Fleetwood's views reflect his own, and he was not speaking on behalf of the organization. Okay, got it. Harmeet Dhillon, the lawyer of Andy Ngo, she's got an awesome statement that I posted in full on our website. I just want to read the last line because it's the best part of her statement. Beyond being despicable, such statements about Mr. Ngo and his injuries are plainly false and defamatory and will be treated as such. Kind of sounds like David Fleetwood might get sued. One can only hope. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. I'm going to send you a link to this story. I need you to read it, but more importantly, I need you to post it everywhere. David Fleetwood and his tweets are in there. Do not attack him, but feel free to actually respond and call out this dangerous, dangerous position. Text the keyword text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to this story. I need you to help me put a spotlight on this. Please text in the keyword RANTZ. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show. Former Governor Scott Walker is going to stop by in just 5 minutes to talk about this weekend's mass shootings, the media bias covering President Trump, plus his upcoming speaking engagement at the Washington State GOP convention dinner. You're not going to want to miss it. You're listening to The Jason Rancho on What's Trending, brought to you by KeelMortgage.com. Welcome back to The Jason Rancho on AM 770, KTTH, and 94.5 FM in the Greater East Side. The 2020 election undoubtedly changed over the weekend with two mass shootings highlighting gun control and nasty rhetoric coming from both sides of the aisle. Joining me to discuss this and his upcoming appearance at the annual Washington State Republican Party dinner on September 13th, which, by the way, I'll be emceeing again this year, is former Wisconsin governor, former presidential candidate, Scott Walker. Sir, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, my pleasure. Glad to be with you on Friday the 13th.
Yeah, no,
I'm not superstitious, so I'm just happy to be out in the great state of Washington again.
Yeah, I'm excited to do this. This is one of the events where so many people from all across the state get together with the shared goal. And for you, when you're coming into Washington State and you're giving a speech like this, there's a lot on your plate that you cover, from going after like sort of taxing issues, but also trying to inspire younger Republicans to get more involved. So when putting together a speech like this, what exactly is the goal?
Well, I think in the state of Washington, it's a reminder that, you know, Wisconsin and Washington, that not that many years ago, were not that unalike. I remember in the 2000 election when then Governor George W. Bush was running, Wisconsin and Washington were both considered to be battleground states, or at least potentially battleground states. I remember at the national convention that year. We, a decade later, in 2010, went from all blue, meaning governor, lieutenant governor, both U.S. senators, both houses of the legislature, 5 of the 8 seats in Congress went from all blue. We flipped that to Republican. And even though we're still a very purple, if not blue, state, we were able to make changes, not just to elect Republicans, but then to do the things we said we were going to do. And part of my speech is going to be talking about some of those things, but more importantly, talking about the things we did with the grassroots to make that even possible and make the case it could be done in Washington as well.
So for sort of this grassroots approach in Washington, how much does it help the Republican Party that the union infrastructure is not quite what it used to be here? Because obviously in Wisconsin, you were an integral part of making sure the unions didn't have this sort of unbalanced influence in state elections.
Well, that's exactly right. We gave workers the freedom to choose. And so not only was it a pro-taxpayer approach, it was a pro-worker approach, saying public and private alike eventually, that people could choose whether they wanted to be in a union or not. And a lot of particularly public sector employees, good public servants, said, I don't want to give that $1,500 away to my unions that oftentimes support candidates who don't align with my beliefs, my principles. And so that completely changed things. We saw a dramatic drop off of union membership. And that wasn't the reason we did it. We did it because we needed to do that from a taxpayer standpoint, not only to balance our budgets, but to put the taxpayers back in charge again. The benefit was, though, politically, is when you give people that choice, many of them chose not to be a part of the unions, because many public employees, despite what you might think, actually are much more open-minded than their union gives them credit for.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, if you want to learn more about this event that we're putting on September 13th, buy tickets. Go to WSRP.org. The governor will be giving his speech there. I will be the MC for the event. I give a good lead-in speech, I'm not going to lie. And I think part of that is, Governor, I don't really prepare at all. I'm a talk show host. I just talk.
Which is a good thing. I filled in a couple for talk show hosts here in Wisconsin. And I have a whole new appreciation for what it takes to do that, but I've had a little fun with that. So I don't prepare. I don't have a written text. I have some thoughts in my head, but I'm not that far off from you in the sense that I like to accommodate what issues come up along the way. And in this case, I was just in for the Washington Policy Center not too long, a couple months ago. So I think I got a pretty good sense of what's going on. Certainly, I know your current governor. I don't align with him in any way whatsoever. I actually tweeted when he got in the presidential election. It was kind of funny for a guy claiming his whole campaign was about climate change and lowering his carbon footprint. His first picture, I think, was on a private jet flying around the nation, you know, kicking off his campaign. But that's the left for you. They don't look what they do. Just look what they say.
It's complete hypocrisy. And, you know, one of the issues that you're taking on right now, you just joined on with the National Taxpayers Union. Obviously, issues concerning taxpayers, issues concerning all of our listeners. What part of the tax conversation are we missing right now with this 2020 election?
Well, two parts. I think one, the media has bought in, national media has bought into the left. Sometimes they're indistinguishable. But this idea that the left has presented that the tax cuts were only for corporations and the super wealthy, the facts show just the opposite is true, that over more than 80% of middle-class Americans got a tax cut. The vast majority of all Americans got a tax cut. Some of the people complaining the most were some of the highest-end owners in places like New York City. But overall, the tax cuts not only were good for taxpayers, they're part of the reason why the economy is just red hot out there. And unfortunately, if you look at poll after poll, most Americans don't believe that to be the case. And part of it is because they, most Americans don't see a paycheck anymore. And so they just believe, you know, they buy into these lies that are perpetuated by the media out there. The other part is I don't know that people fully appreciate on the other end of the spectrum how much taxes are going to go up. Mm-hmm. At least give Bernie Sanders credit. I don't agree with him at all, but I at least think he's straightforward. He's not in any way does he apologize for beliefs. He said, you do his Medicare for all, you do his other socialist programs, your taxes are going to go up. And he tries to make the argument somehow that that'll be offset by these great reductions in your health care costs. But the fact of the matter is most Americans get their health care coverage through their employer. And mm-hmm. so they're only paying a tiny portion of those premiums. They're not going to see that. Yet they're going to see a massive income tax increase that'll really, I think, be a big hit on the nation's economy.
What I don't understand about that entire argument, Governor Walker, the argument that's being made, not just by Bernie Sanders, but Elizabeth Warren, who will not admit that it's going to cost more in taxes. Kamala Harris, who kind of sometimes admits that you're going to have no
every
choice.
Other day.
Yeah, it's just kind of weird.
Yeah.
but these are policies that when polled are not popular. And yet they present them as if there's this eagerness on the American people to accept them. What exactly is the strategy there? I honestly don't understand.
Well, I think that, you know, the gut reaction is you see this in some of our college campuses. It is unfortunate that people, it sounds good. We want to help everybody. We want to make sure everybody's taken care of. And that's particularly where someone like Senator Harris is at. She says that, and then the next day when pressed, she flips and says, well, no. You know, we're not going to take away people's private health insurance. We're not going to raise their taxes. Well, then you're not really for the plan that Senator Sanders is for. Again, I at least give him credit for being brave enough to say exactly what it does. But when people think about government-run healthcare, when they look at the examples of thinking about this federal government, the government that screws up so many things along the way, when you think of all the problems, sadly, in the VA, and they've taken a lot of time, a lot of effort to try and fix some of those, multiply that out nationwide, and think about the quality of health care that we have. Do we need to control costs? Absolutely. To me, more transparency, putting consumers back in charge, allowing people to be treated not like a number but like a person. Those are all things the market can drive, yeah. Not the government. The government, as Reagan once said, and the government is not the solution. The government is the problem. And this would only be made worse if we handed the federal government all of our health care decisions.
Just joining me, I'm talking with Governor Scott Walker of Wisconsin. He will be in town on September 13th. That's next month at the Hyatt Regency in Bellevue for a speech for the Washington State Republican Party. It's their annual dinner. I'll be the MC. Tickets are on sale at WSRP.org. Let's talk a little bit about what happened over the weekend. Obviously, it's going to change the 2020 campaign, at least in the short term. For you, how have the candidates and the president responded to the actual shootings?
Well, the political aftermath and all this is probably, to me, historically, not just this recent time, but the last couple times, it's just been so horrific in the sense that there are people. I mean, I think Harris actually went out and within a short amount of time was already fundraising off of it. And my goodness, let people grieve, try to get to the bottom of it. I always found no matter what the situation was, whether it was something tragic like this or anything else, let's figure out exactly what's going on. I mean, you had a whole group of folks on the left try to claim that it was the president's fault, that it was rhetoric, ignoring the fact that then there are all these other stories about the second one in Ohio being involving, as it similar stories were about the person who went after the congressional baseball Republican team, where it was people embracing things on the left. I mean, the bottom line is you can have people on the left or the right who are just filled with awful, hateful, outrageous rhetoric out there. The president's comments were right in the money. There's no place for hate in America today. To me, those are the kind of comments I'd want out of whether it was President Trump now or years ago, President Obama. That's what you expect out of a president at the time. But then to have people nitpick you. I mean, Dan Rather, to me, was one of the most amazing things for a so-called former journalist. He was out saying that the media shouldn't be using quotes from a prepared speech without really understanding if he meant it or not. I'm like, did they ever question all the written speeches that Barack Obama gave off of a teleprompter? Of course not. I mean, my goodness, did anyone ever say, you know, when John F. Kennedy read, ask not what you can do for your, you know, what your country can do for you, but for you can do for your country. No, this president gets the kind of scrutiny that no other president has received before he has. And I can relate to that because they did the same sorts of things to me in Wisconsin. But that's why you got to keep pushing back.
Well, yeah. And, you know, one of the things that drives me absolutely nuts in all of this is there's clearly, whenever we're talking about gun violence, there is the mental health aspect. And oftentimes afterwards, we say we don't have enough conversations about that. Last night on Twitter, Senator Patty Murray from right here in Washington, she said mental health issues don't cause mass shootings. Guns do. Vilifying people who have a mental illness won't help end mass shootings. I don't know how people are supposed to have a conversation about mental health when the mere notion of someone dealing with mental illness is determined to be vilifying.
Well, and in particular, I mean, there is a distinction. I don't see anybody making that doesn't mean everybody who's got diagnosed mental illness is capable of doing these awful, horrific acts. So I think that's just a bogus argument on her part. On the flip side, I don't know how you can say whether it's with a firearm, whether it's with explosives like you see with groups like Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and others around the world, or whether it's any other weapon out there, how it can't be not only just evil, but how there has to be some breakdown in terms of the mental status. And I think study after study shows, sadly, that for a lot of these folks, what you see is that people, after the fact, it's almost always, I can predict it, it's almost always, I remember once I was actually at a press conference about a program called If You See Something, Say Something, which is often thought about at airports, but it's anywhere out there. If you see something disturbing, let law enforcement and others know about it, because the best tools for apprehending people involved with awful things like this is their fellow citizens saying, hey, this person seems like something's weird here. And sure enough, something awful happened. And within hours, there were stories out there of people saying, you know, yeah, this guy, this neighbor of mine, this coworker of mine really seemed awful. And we'll say something about it, pass it on. There's usually early signs that do relate to mental illness of people having a breakdown. And again, horrible, tragic thing. There's no way to say anything about it other than that. But in this society, and we've seen it around the world, whether it's firearms or it's explosives or other things out there, people left untreated end up doing horrible things, and we just can't let that happen.
It's an unfortunate reality. We've been talking with Governor Scott Walker. Don't forget, if you want to purchase tickets to the annual dinner for the Washington State Republican Party on September 13th, it's at the Hyatt Regency in Bellevue. Go to WSRP.org. Governor Walker, I look forward to introducing you and meeting you next week at the dinner. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Look forward to being there Friday the 13th. I hope others will join us.
I hope as well. Again, WSRP.org. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho, live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for the messages on the Governor Scott Walker interview. If you missed any moment of it, we just tweeted out the link to the podcast, the recording of it. You can get it on your KTH smartphone app or just go to twitter.com/JasonRants. It was hot today. I'm lucky I'm in a studio where I keep the air conditioning on at 64 degrees at all times. I like it cold in here. People think like it's sub-tundra. That's how I like it. But obviously people are living outside and it's hot. And these are people who generally are living with just the only clothes that they own. We're talking about jackets. We're talking about heavy jeans, stuff like that. And it reminds us that there are people in desperate need of some help in times like these. Where to you and me, we're like, oh, 78 degrees, maybe you like that. 83 degrees, maybe you love that. Well, it's a lot for people who are homeless. And that's why Seattle's Union Gospel Mission is setting up a water station on the sidewalk outside of their shelter in Pioneer Square. Brian Chandler, the director of outreach, told our sister station Cairo Radio.
And it goes kind of along with everything that we do. Anytime there's an opportunity for an emergency situation, we step up with the heat. There's certainly chances of dehydration and other things that take place. And it's another great opportunity for the folks that we serve to be able to have another conversation about what it even looks like to have life a little bit different than living on the streets.
And that last part is really what this is about. They're trying to make contact with people to convince them that living out on the streets is not good for them. And they need to get into shelter and into services that UGM can provide. Now, I talk about the story not just to remind you of the great work that the Union Gospel Mission does, not just the one in Seattle, all of them, all across the state do tremendous work, but to remind you that these people are living out on the streets because of failed leadership in the Seattle City Council and the mayor's office. That's from a Seattle perspective. When you see people living out on the street in Olympia, that's because of the failure of the city of Olympia. We have circumstances all across the state in which we have quote-unquote leaders who are not getting people off of the streets because they don't want to hassle folks. They think that it lacks compassion to move them from their quote-unquote homes, meaning a park, an alleyway, a sidewalk, moving them into shelter. Some of them will say, well, what about their belongings? They don't want to part ways with it. Too bad. I don't say that because I want to be a jerk, but because I know that everything that they currently have, their possessions, can be replaced once they get on the path to self-sustainability. Once they get into a home. Once they get off any drug that they might be addicted to or alcohol that they're addicted to. Once they get the mental health care treatment that they desperately need. Once they get the job skills or education that they need so that they can get a job and then an apartment. Then they can replace the stuff that some of them most likely stole. It is not compassionate to leave these people out when it's pouring rain, when it's freezing cold, or when it's really hot. That's actually the opposite of compassion. Seattle compassion is weird. Seattle is the only place where their version of compassion will kill people. That's weird to me. That they with a straight face can say, it's compassionate to keep these people out on the streets. Remember this as you vote today, especially for those of you who live in Seattle, especially for those of you who still have that ballot. You need to vote today. You have until 8 o'clock to go down to a center to either drop off your ballot in one of the drop boxes or vote in person. You owe it to yourself because there are people out there like Lisa Herbold and Deborah Juarez, two council members on the Seattle City Council right now, who are against these sweeps, who have been in charge as the situation has gotten worse. You've got a lot of people all across the state who have some really good ideas on how to address the issues that are facing the community, whether we're talking about homelessness or anything else. So make sure you go out and vote. For those of you who live in Sultan, make sure you vote for Russell Wieda, who's running for mayor. Todd Welch for Lake Stephen City Council. Anna Rohrbaugh for Snohomish County Council. Jennifer Robinson in Bellevue. So much more. It's the Jason Rants Show.